Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good Tuesday morning, everyone. We've got some great guests and conversations for you this morning. The legendary First Amendment lawyer Floyd Abrams on the rights of Private Bradley Manning, the alleged leaker of government documents to WikiLeaks. Everyone debates the rights of WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. What about a guy who actually leaks the documents? WNYC's Beth Fertig today on Mayor Bloomberg's warning that some schools could lose two-thirds of their teachers under the last hired, first fired layoff rules. Now, regardless of how layoffs are done, I think it exposes something else, that some schools have a disproportionate share of inexperienced teachers. So we'll talk about that with Beth. And Adam Gopnik from The New Yorker today, who identifies three kinds of people regarding our attitude about the internet. He calls them the never-betters, the better-nevers, and the always-wasers. We'll see which one you are. Now, Governor Scott Walker, take note. A New York Times CBS News poll out this morning might have some sobering news for you. I will just read from this. It says, as labor battles erupt in state capitals around the nation, a majority of Americans say they oppose efforts to weaken the collective bargaining rights of public employee unions and are also against cutting the pay or benefits of public workers to reduce state budget deficits, according to the latest CBS New York Times CBS News poll. It says labor unions are not exactly popular, though. A third of those surveyed viewed them favorably. A quarter viewed them unfavorably, and the rest said they were either undecided or had not heard enough about them. I love that. Like 40% of the people say they haven't heard enough about labor unions to have an opinion. But the nationwide poll found that embattled public employee unions have the support of most Americans and most independents as they fight the efforts of newly elected Republican governors in Wisconsin and Ohio. Americans oppose weakening the bargaining rights of public employee unions by a margin of nearly 2-1, the article says, 60% to 33%. While a slim majority of Republicans favor taking away some bargaining rights, they were outnumbered by large majorities of Democrats and independents who said they oppose weakening them. Those surveyed said they opposed 56 to 37% cutting the pay or benefits of public employees to reduce deficits. How about that? So with me now to discuss this and the small matter of U.S. warships being moved around now near Libya is New York Times Chief Washington Correspondent David Sanger. Hey, David, welcome back to WNYC.
Always good to be with you, Brian.
And as many of you know, David also does a weekly Monday morning Washington report on WQXR. David, you know, I think we're seeing how difficult it is for people to hold on to two thoughts in their mind at the same time. Yes, some pensions and health benefits for public sector workers are out of whack, but it doesn't mean they have to give up even the right to collectively bargain. Or on the other side, we love our cops and school teachers, and some governors may be enjoying this confrontation just a little bit too much, but still something needs to be done. Are these poll results just weird?
Well, I think people are just trying to get their heads around the question of, can you rely completely on cutting budgets, or do you need much greater flexibility in how you organize teachers and firefighters and every other kind of public servant around? And just as the private sector has sought much more flexibility in the way people who are in union positions can be moved from job to job, I think the private sector and the public sector, you know, are both looking for that. The difficulty they're running into is that it's run headlong now into what appears to be an effort by many of these governors to break some of the unions. And that's a different thing than getting job flexibility. And the two have gotten conflated.
I guess so. Are you surprised that those surveyed by the Times said that they oppose cutting the pay or benefits of public employees to reduce deficits? Because a lot of level-headed people say, look, we love our cops and school teachers, but some of the pensions and health benefits, the way they've been structured in past agreements, are just unsustainable.
Well, you know, it's very hard looking at poll numbers to figure out what people are thinking behind their answers. But if I had to guess, my guess is that they think that this is a wedge into eventually cutting the many of the Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security benefits that everybody knows are going to be up on the table once we get into a serious discussion on reducing deficits.
So and people feel they have skin in the game, whether or not they're public employees.
Right. I mean, that it's an opening wedge.
And how about this? I don't expect you to really know the answer, but I couldn't help but laugh at that poll that found labor unions in general are not exactly popular. A third of those surveyed viewed them favorably. A quarter viewed them unfavorably. But the rest, that means 42%, said they hadn't heard enough about labor unions to have an opinion.
You know, always the most shocking thing in polls is what people admit they haven't heard of. And, you know, in the course of watching what's going on in Egypt, Libya, Tunisia, all the other places in recent times, I've been astounded by the number of poll numbers from people who say that they have only barely heard that there was something going on. Mm. So I've ceased to be shocked by this.
And I have a question for you as chief Washington correspondent. I'm curious if this is a conversation in Washington. It's certainly a conversation, you know, in the States. And that is, if Wall Street crashed the economy, why are we taking it out politically on school teachers?
Because you've got two separate issues underway here. Part of it is you have Wall Street crash the economy. We can get into a separate discussion, and we've had it many times on this show about what all the various factors were. But certainly there have been growing deficits, and the effort to get out of the economic situation the U.S. has been in for the past 2 years have taken those deficits and put them on steroids. So now suddenly we're trying to catch up with a deficit conversation that we probably as a nation should have been having much more seriously before the crash of 08 and 09. And it's all the harder now. And, you know, it's fallen down to the states in time because once federal aid begins to dry up, it flows down to the troubles that the states have. And, of course, state revenue collection across the country has been extraordinarily low. And it's a lot of these states have something the federal government does not have, which is a balanced budget amendment.
Did you see the moment at the Oscars Sunday night where the winner of Best Documentary for Inside Job used his 15 seconds of fame to say no one on Wall Street has yet gone to jail for the crimes that crashed the economy, and yet he's like this lone radical while we go about laying off thousands of teachers and vilifying retired police officers? Washington, I guess, isn't having that conversation.
Well, you know, I was thinking when I heard that he might check in with Mr. Madoff in his cell, because while it wasn't explicitly for crashing the economy, it certainly involved practices that contributed to that. And he would probably, Mr. Madoff sitting in that cell would probably have a different view on that.
But Madoff's a criminal in the old-fashioned sense.
That's true.
People committed much more sophisticated crimes, I would dare to guess, along the way here. All right, we just have a few minutes, but the U.S. is now repositioning warships in the region around Libya. How might the U.S. military get involved?
Well, the U.S. military could get involved, and other members of NATO could get involved by enforcing a no-fly zone over Libya, which would make it much harder for the Air Force loyal to Colonel Gaddafi to get in the air and bomb the insurgents who are moving in slowly on Tripoli. But this gets to a much more complex debate that in the world of the UN is called responsibility to protect. It even has its own acronym, R2P, for those who really want to go into the wonky elements of this. And the question is, can the U.S., can the United Nations, can NATO forces go inside the borders of a country to protect people who are suffering at the hands of their own leader when that country has not committed an act of aggression, at least involved in this set of incidents, beyond its borders? And this was an issue, of course, that came up in Rwanda. It came up where the U.S. And the U.N. did very little. It came up in Serbia, where, of course, the U.S. did a lot. And it's coming up again here. And we haven't fully heard Obama on this question.
Right. Now, I heard the president take some heat on Sunday, on the Sunday talk shows, for not moving in warships earlier, and not out of that, you know, altruistic responsibility to protect the people of Libya, but rather to protect Americans and American interests. And the argument was that other countries did move in battleships to evacuate their people, while the U.S. moved in a ferry boat. No wonder the ferry got stuck in, quote, weather, the critique went.
So I'm not sure that other countries, I could be wrong on this, moved in naval vessels or naval vessels that were armed. I think that would have been a pretty risky move.
And the criticism may have been off base, too, but that was,
yeah,
you know.
I mean, the bottom line here is that the president decided to withhold many of his criticisms until the American citizens were out because he didn't want to get into a hostage crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most of those Americans got out and were not facing a hostage crisis. And, you know, part of what strikes me about Libya is that two things that could have gone wildly wrong have not. The first is we don't have a hostage crisis. That gives the president much more leeway now in deciding what to go do. And, of course, the embassy's been closed, U.S. embassy, and evacuated. So he has an easier time now in acting. The second and far more important of these is one that we wrote about this morning and have up on the homepage of NewYorkTimes.com right now, which is that the Bush administration was successful in 2003 and 2004 in getting the nuclear weapons program stopped and shipped out of Libya and getting its chemical weapons destroyed, literally bulldozed over. This was volunteered by Gaddafi as he was trying to win his way back into the good graces of Western countries, get oil investment and so forth. Can you imagine how much more complex the situation we're facing now, horrific as it may be, would be if Colonel Gaddafi could threaten the use of either nuclear or chemical weapons?
Mm, really? All right. Well, on that piece of relatively good news, we leave it.
That is good news. If you ever wanted to hear a good case for nonproliferation efforts, that's it.
There you go. David Sanger, Chief Washington Correspondent for The New York Times. And remember, listeners, you can hear him every morning, every Monday morning on our sister station, WQXR, when he goes on to do a Washington report. David, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, the legendary First Amendment lawyer Floyd Abrams on the rights of Private Bradley Manning, the alleged leaker of government documents to WikiLeaks. Everyone's debating the rights of WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. What about a guy who actually leaks the documents? Stay with us.